outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Kyle, have you been on any of the Bible search programs lately, websites, any of that stuff?
Bible Gateway I use every once in a while, yeah.
Man, have you noticed how they changed lately?
I haven't.
Oh my gosh, I've gone to a few of them lately and they're so full of ads, they can't even load your queries anymore, or the page just freezes up and you want to change the search option and you can't change the search option. I'm telling you, the Bible has once again been farmed out for profitable purposes. And now, and it's not just like a few ads, an ad or two. There are so many ads, it cannot load. And my browser will say, this page is taking up so much memory that you're going to have to do something. I hate that yet again. The Bible is used by people who are going to make a freaking fortune off providing some search tools.
Now that you say it, I wanted to just go and see, like, okay, what does my Bible Gateway app have?
I didn't mention them by name, so you're going to have to deal with lawyers.
Oh, dear. Well, that's the Bible search engine app that I'm used to using. I mean, it came up initially with the verse of the day, and then, yeah, there's quite a few ads on
it. I don't use apps. I'm writing, so I'm looking at it on my computer browser, just a normal browser. And there's just, it's like any other website you go to now, like news things or clicks from social media websites. You go to them, and there's so many ads. I finally just leave before I even try and read anything. It's just not worth it to sit through all that scrolling and spinning balls. And I don't know how many ads people can cram on a podcast, on a website, and be functional still. But we're thinking about finding out at livestream.org. I'm going to start. Ooh. No, I'm kidding. I'm not.
You're going to start selling ads on livestream.org, are you?
Livestream.org, all free, all the time, commercial free, AI free.
Ooh, okay.
As is the God Journey. So,
no, it's hard to even read articles anymore, because you get, like, if you're looking at your computer screen, right? Like, I can see a paragraph of the article that I'm reading, and the rest is encapsulated in just ads. And it's like, I don't even know if it's even worth it. Like, it's hard for me to even know what's the ad, what is the article sometimes. I mean, they just,
You hit the scroll down button and it takes forever to load, and then it goes too far and then you can't get back. And yeah, it's, I can't imagine these website owners don't have a sense of where can we run this and keep our website functional. Otherwise, people like me, I'm not going to wade through it. I'm not going to wade through that much ad stuff.
No, it's just, it's not worth the headache, personally.
It was a wonderful thing when DVRs came into whatever, and you didn't have to sit through commercials anymore.
Yes.
Now, everything is a commercial. They've got it. There's ways you can't get around it. And the only way you have to do is when you watch live sports on TV, but there's ways they do it now where you get ads no matter what.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're the product, right?
Yeah, we are the product, unfortunately. So I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And you got a best thing you heard this week?
Not necessarily a best thing. I think it was more of an influential thing. And we may talk about this a little bit more later on in the podcast, but I'd say impactful thing that I experienced this week. We had a large collaboration at my college that we hosted, and the whole emphasis was on mental health. So everybody, all the big community stakeholders in the area all came in, and we were creating a space to have conversation about mental health in our community and how do we support it and how do we provide opportunities for people to experience healing and wholeheartedness. Well, the whole day, there was four panels of speakers that came up and were sharing, not to mention their like keynote speaker.
Yep.
The whole day, it was all about these conversations about severely mentally ill individuals and the challenges that they're going through and how we don't have enough resources for them, which is viable. When people need help, when they're in crisis, we need to have services to support them. So I stood up near the end of the day, and I just asked, so I'm a new community member. I'm a dad. I would love to hear what we are doing as a community that is preventative so that specifically young people don't even need a diagnosis because we have stepped in and impacted their lives in a positive way so that they don't get there. They don't get to crisis. They don't get to that space. And it went dead silent. The room went dead silent. And there was the only person that gave like an honest, authentic answer was the new psychiatrist who was on the panel. And he just moved to the community as well. And he's like, I don't know. That's a great question. And I would love to hear the answer to that too. And then the room just stayed silent. And it broke my heart because we have become a firefighter community. And I think it moves beyond just our community and moves to our entire nation where we're just looking at all these raging fires that are popping up. And that's where we devote our time, our finances, our resources, our professionalism, instead of looking at how do we start investing in our community and our people relationally in a caring and authentic way to where the necessity of professional mental health drops significantly. It's not that we won't need it, and it's not that I don't value it, but I feel like, man, it again was a stark reminder of the need that's out there and yet humanity trying to fill this need and us completely missing some of the most valuable tenets in the human experience, meaning just having authentic, genuine relationship and community in our lives, or being able to have a real conversation with another human being. There was several things that just came to my mind and I was just...
And how would a community provide that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can do that, but I think it's on a different community to community basis. But for example, having opportunities for caring adults to be able to engage with young adults and youth in an intentional way that just builds that community, builds that relationship. So that could be a coach that is intentional. That could be somebody who has a local bakery and they invite a few young people to come in and learn alongside of them. And in the midst of them learning how to bake, they're pouring into their lives and encouraging them and having real conversations. It could be, I mean, a lot of the things that we did in our society in the past, for example, the son and the dad's working on, stereotypical, but the dad's working on the car, the son's out there with him, handing him tools. And it creates a space for shared memory, shared relationship, shared community, shared conversation. And we have eliminated so many of those. I mean, Jess and I were driving down to visit my family this weekend for the Super Bowl, and we were going to go surprise them. And it's a 4-hour drive. Our daughters, within seconds of getting in the car, they wanted to be able to watch a movie on the iPad, which I'm not knocking that. They got to watch a movie while we were on the drive, but there's a lot of road time to be able to have genuine conversation and connection and interaction with one another. And I feel like so quickly we are eliminating those spaces that previous generations honestly took for granted, that they were built into cultural norms. And now we're having to completely realign where we're at as a society and say, no, we've lost a bunch of things when we have increased technology, increased efficiency, increased productivity, and yet we've lost a lot of those very sacred spaces that conversation and relationship took place.
And I think that's what most people would assume a healthy lifestyle is going to have, right? You're going to find time for community. You're going to find time for connection with parents and friends and others, and that's all going to happen quite naturally.
But it doesn't.
I'm sad to hear that that's true, because I think anytime we try to do that through an institutional arrangement, it always lacks something. It always,
yes,
you know. So I last couple of weeks I went to a church service, and then I went to a house church kind of thing in the area just to kind of see what's going on. And every time you try to mechanize community, it gets to be a problem. I don't know that we know how to encourage community without setting up a group and rules and it already being a conformity-based reality that people who come to it have to look a certain way, say a certain thing, whatever, to find real community, I think is an interpersonal reality. And it's through having people like you, like me, who are willing to help facilitate that for others without creating a program that people have to buy into. Does that make sense?
It does. I think a lot of people too, that the feedback that I get from people 40 plus is, okay, how do I even connect with this younger generation? And large, because they look on and they're like, okay, all they care about are their video games, their TikTok, Twitter, social media, et cetera. Like that's their focus. That's their world. And my pushback is, well, are we giving them any other option? Are we actually inviting them into our world? And I was listening to a podcast about parenting, and one of the things that came up was just the desire for young, that it's simple, like the desire for young people to be invited into whatever it is that you're doing, to feel like a member, being special in the fact that you cared about them enough to just invite them along. Whatever you're doing, whether it's your work or you've got a side job you got to do or a chore you need to take on or you got to go and fix the car, whatever it might be, that invitation of come be with me. And I think a lot of people, they overcomplicate it. And I think that those things that we do so normally as a time to recharge, to re-engage, to rest, if we started intentionally seeing that as an opportunity to also invite younger people into that space and share that with them, it's as simple as that. And that could be gardening, that could be cooking, that could be fishing, that could be working on a car. I mean, the sky is the limit. Just reminding or reinvigorating that, oh, I could be intentional here to invite some people into this.
I think this is where overgeneralization of groups of people, whether it's boomers or Zers or whoever, it doesn't serve us well.
Yes.
Because people get intimidated because of what they've heard about that generation. And they forget they're just people. And
correct.
I meet people of different ages just going about life, and I don't have any trouble talking to a 20-year-old, a 40-year-old, a 50-year-old. It just, they're people. And you can, when you take an interest in them and what they're interested in and all that, then a relationship builds, and then you can invite them along to something that you, if they want to learn something. We've had people tell us, I've never learned to cook. Well, come on over for a few weeks on different nights, and Sarah and I will work you through what a meal looks like and how you put a meal together. And that stuff's very, just if they're just people to us, but if they get to be part of that generation, whether it's boomers, whether it's Zers, or I don't know what the latest one is these days. I forget the term.
Yeah. They haven't even branded the new one yet, I don't think.
I heard some, not that somebody's not trying to. Yeah, somebody, you make a lot of money if you brand it first and get your book out. So,
oh my God.
I'm sure people are trying to do it.
But yeah, so it was an interesting space for me because, again, my heart was reignited for the desire to be able to see specifically young, the intergenerational relationship being created of how, what does it look like to put a fresh emphasis on community and connection in such a way that helps rebuild some of those relational skills, soft skills, community skills that have been so deeply compromised over the last couple of decades, I would say.
Yeah, I'm just not nuts about government providing that or, you know,
I agree.
Because I think it would happen normally for most people. And I think the other side of the mental health industry is we're actually working for those people for whom it didn't work well. So they've entered crisis. They don't have resources. They don't have a safety net. They don't have social whatever. And that's why I think it's probably very crisis oriented. And so when you bring up the idea of being proactive about doing something that keeps us from getting to crisis, that's like talking to a firefighter about what do we do in the forest before we have the big fire when they're running from one fire to another, putting them out. They don't have time to stop and think about how could we prevent this, although I'm sure they do. But in the heat of the battle, when crisis is overwhelming, as it is in our culture and just about every area right now, it's tough to think about how do we stop and be proactive about those things.
So you say that these things happen naturally, that they should happen organically, naturally in our community. I would say in general, it's not happening at nearly the level of frequency that it has in the past. So how do you see it happening naturally in your community now? Like, how do you see that happening in society now?
I don't,
versus the apocalyptic mental health perspective that we have in regards to what's going on in our culture today.
Yeah, and I don't know that I'm that invested in this community because I've traveled a lot when I've lived here, and I don't know what all the resources are that are doing that. The people I know in this community have those kind of connections. And my generation, you know, in the 50s and 60s growing up, 70s, there was a lot of that kind of, that did happen naturally. And those friendships carry on through life. And so you have them quite naturally. I just think we've probably left a generation or two behind because we haven't invested in them as kids. And we haven't built the relationships that are there when they get into their 20s. And we've had that problem we've talked about before about adulting and not even knowing what adulthood looks like. So it's easier to stay on my devices and stay in my basement playing war games, whatever, instead of getting out and having those kinds of connections with other people of different ages. And maybe families. I think family's a big part of that. Could be. You got aunts and uncles. You should have a whole lot of intergenerational where if a child needs help or a younger adult needs help, they've got people to contact and say, yeah, hey, uncle, would you teach me this or show me that? I know people my age, if somebody comes up to us from a younger age, say, Wayne, would you help me with this? And I have skills at that. Man, that's just one of the greatest things to be asked to do. But there may be waiting, like you said, for the older people to ask, hey, would you like me to teach you this or that and the other thing? And I don't know that it works as well that way. I think the initiative, maybe the skills in adulting to recognize relationships, to pursue relationships. If you want to learn something, don't think about signing up for a class. Think about an adult you know that already does it and ask if they'll help you.
So what were ways in the 50s, 60s, 70s that naturally facilitated relationship, community, those lifelong friendships that we're not doing or that you don't see happening in today's culture?
I think everything was smaller back then. So if you went to a quote-unquote church, people knew each other there. Now you go to a mega church and you don't know anybody. You sit in a pew and you watch a production up front, and then you kind of walk out and you don't have those connections and relationships that grow more naturally. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I just think through school, through university, through life, through whatever, you just take an interest in people and you extend your life to them, and people are interested in friendship, you enjoy it. And people who aren't, you just move on and find people who are. And that's why I don't think it took a lot of intentional, and I don't know what that would be other than, like you said, if it was a way to teach people how to do that, that would be different than now we're providing 17 different intergenerational home groups in the area and invite you to be part of one of them. And then two or three of them would be pretty decent because the people in them are, and 80% of them would be lame as could be, and people would stop going pretty quickly.
My orientation is positive psychology. That's where I've always leaned anyway. And so for me, there's been a lot of just questioning lately, especially as my daughters are getting older. You know, they're preparing to go into kindergarten. Those different elements are coming into play. And I'm like, okay, what does it look like to move in a different direction in a preventative way, in a interventional way versus we've completely neglected these individuals or the support network or the relationship structure or whatever it might be around those individuals was so depleted growing up that now they're in such a space that we need residential facilities because a first-year-old is cutting themselves in class to try to let the pain out. That's where we're at. And I get why, if that's where we're at as a culture, then all of a sudden all we see are the fires of emergency and crisis all around us. And yet, for me, it's like, okay, there's so many young people or so many people in general that are out there that haven't gotten there yet and yet would substantially benefit from connections and relationships and engagement from the people around them. I don't know if I told you this, but I was going in and introducing myself to some of our neighbors. And so I went up and introduced myself to one family, and the feedback from this one mom that was probably in her mid to late 30s. Her feedback was, man, you don't see this anymore. What you just did is quite an art to come up and introduce yourself to your neighbor and to say, hey, happy to meet you. And we're excited to be here in the neighborhood. That's a real art. I haven't seen that for a while. And like, that blew my mind. It's like, how do you not go and introduce yourself to your neighbors around you just to know who's there? I don't know.
I think in the old days, the people who were in the neighborhood would generally bring cookies over and welcome the new people to the neighborhood. Now the new people in the neighborhood have to go out and find that connection, because I just think, you know, the way our neighborhoods are built now, the way everything is, just you got a cloistered home with the fences and garages that open and close, and most people never go out on the street. This neighborhood we live in now, people are out on the street all the time, walking dogs, just being, and it's easy. It's been easy for us to get to know neighbors in this neighborhood and feel invested in them already. Mm-hmm. And we've only been here almost 2 years now, coming up.
Yeah.
So I know in other neighborhoods or apartment complexes or whatever, where it's really nameless, faceless people, you just pass them and you don't have that time to make that connection. But I agree with you. If you're going to live near somebody, might as well figure out who they are and say hi and see what you have in common. And
so that was a long best thing that I observed this
took
week.
The whole podcast. We're almost done. You obviously have a lot of passion from this thing you read.
Yeah, more than a little bit.
Well, best thing I heard last week was, this is on a personal basis, that probably not anybody else, but my oncologist said to me, you need to probably start coming in every other week instead of every week.
Ooh, that is a best thing.
That's a great thing.
That is a best thing.
And in March, he's thinking about, we'll be able to go to once a month. He said, you're at the place in 3.5 months that most people don't get to until 6 months. Just the numbers going down and just how things are working out. So for somebody who had 5 stabs last week just to find a vein they could draw blood from, and you got to have one every time you go in to start chemo. That's the first thing they do is take your blood so they know what to give you by what your blood work shows and how much of this and that's already there. And so, yeah, it's a great relief to Sarah and I. It's supposed to be tomorrow, and I'm not going. The first Wednesday since October, I'm not having to run in and have chemo. So other than the holidays where we flipped it to another day, and then I had COVID. So I got 2 weeks off for that. But mostly when I felt good, I've been hanging down there for more treatment. I'm really grateful for that.
Where are you at in regards to, I know a couple of podcasts ago, we processed a little bit about the embarrassment around having cancer and you were really navigating that and working through that. Where are you at in that conversation now? Like, as you're talking to people and it's part of your story, your numbers are getting better. What does that look like for you now?
Well, I'm sorry, it's talking about it pretty openly. So that hasn't changed, but I don't feel the embarrassment thing anymore. And I think when I shared it, I was already not feeling a whole lot of it then, but I was aware that that had been part of my journey through this thing. What's been incredible is I've got lots of email from people who are embarrassed about other things in their life. One lady embarrassed by a divorce she went through and just realized that was always an embarrassment that she carried, some kind of shame thing. And other people with other kinds of sicknesses or difficulties in their life, crisis. It's almost like we've created, and a lot of them went back to the religious structures they're a part of, whether it's a church community, faith community of some kind, just feeling like if you have a need, something's wrong with you instead of, no, that's just part of what life is. If you don't have a need right now, enjoy the season because it's surely coming at some point. I've really enjoyed the conversations I've had more individually with people who've said, man, you're being honest about that. Help them point to something in themselves where they've struggled with a need and people's perception of that need that probably isn't true, but they carried it. So yeah, it's been pretty neat, but when I was sharing that, it was kind of a discovery. Like most things in my life, I discover what I've been through when I don't feel it anymore, when it's over. Yeah. And you go, you know what? I was actually embarrassed by this thing. That was not something I was conscious of while it was happening, but very aware of in the absence of it, no longer feeling that.
It's interesting the stigmas that we create or that are created in our culture around around weakness, right? Or around perceived weakness, you know, thinking back to our conversation.
Or just been through a difficult thing like a divorce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously there's something wrong with you or you wouldn't have gone through a divorce. And we know that isn't true. Or on the other side of it, there's something wrong with all of us. We could all be divorced if our spouse decided to take a hostile, like me, I was almost divorced 3 years ago. So, and it was based on something false, but it, to me, marriage is a miracle every day.
Yeah.
And I guess this will air on Valentine's Day, February 14th. And I'm telling you what, it's really a joy when God redeems something. What Sarah and I share now, and she had another memory last week we've been working through. So it's not all roses and daisies and all that, but the fact that we're in it together and our love is deeper than it's ever been, and we can talk about anything pretty freely. It's like being newlyweds when we're 2 months away from our 50th anniversary, which is just crazy. We do get to experience that life now. And I think about it every day. I don't take it for granted. I think every day I've got this woman in my life. And she's here and we care about each other. And we have a walk every morning where we kind of go through whatever we need to talk about or want to talk about. And it's really special.
I think that's part of the beauty / risk of marriage is that it's two people with free wills that are a part of it. And, you know, through
two flawed people.
Yes, two flawed people. Exactly. Yeah. And just the fact that, I mean, I work with a lot of people where they're like, well, what could I have done differently to avoid the divorce? Or, you know, that whole conversation of what should I have done differently? Could I have done something differently? And usually, yes, the what ifs or usually there's something in there that you could have done relationally that it could have potentially improved the relationship. Absolutely. Because nobody is perfect. And yet navigating the fact that we're doing relationship with another individual who has free will that could, I mean, it's interesting. So a lot of comments, especially when Jess and I are out here in Wyoming, they hear Jess grew up like she spent the bulk of her adult life in New York, London, and Los Angeles. And then she moved with you to Wyoming?
Yes.
And usually the response is, wow, she must really love you. And I mean, that is a frequent feedback thing that we get on a regular basis. And yet thinking about how different Jess's life became when she left the big city, when she stepped out of acting, when she stepped out of the very high profile job that she was doing in LA. I mean, there was major, 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 major pieces that she walked away from. And it was because she accepted my love and support and saying, babe, I know that you're thriving in this in some ways, and yet it's going to kill you in other ways because your body is literally shutting down from the stress of doing what you're doing. And it doesn't mean we have to leave the city, but we need to figure out something different for you. I got asked by a student today what one of my most impactful or most important relationships in my life was. And I said, well, honestly, it would be my wife because I wouldn't be a fraction of who I am today if it hadn't been for the ways that she has loved and cared for me and walked alongside of me over the last 13 years. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me. Now, that could end in the future, which would be heartbreaking and gut-wrenching. And for, you know, I have no idea what the future holds, but I am so insanely grateful for the opportunity to be able to enjoy life with her now. And that.
Well, happy Valentine's Day to both of you.
Yeah, thank you.
Come up shortly. A couple emails here I thought would be kind of fun to read. One from a lady who recently moved to a new city, and she said, I enjoy your podcast. From the time I was young, I knew gossip was bad, but what you shared finally told me why. Just cool. Mm-hmm. And then she added this. She said she met a woman. This kind of goes back to our community discussion. Met a woman at Costco, and she's new to the city, and ended up talking for 20 minutes, and then ended up exchanging phone numbers, and then ended up getting together for a 2.5-hour conversation at a coffee shop. Then she gave her a copy of Live, Loved, Free, and Full, and they're reading that together. And she said, the clamor of the world says, be afraid, be very, very afraid. The message of love from Father is, don't be afraid, I'm with you. It is wonderful to have 365 daily reflections that remind me of the heart of my Father. Thank you. And I thought that was both sides. She gave the book away, so now they're studying it together. But she comes out and saying, you know, don't be afraid, because God is with us, and he'll walk through us through everything that we've had.
I think that's a powerful, I mean, that imagery, the clamor of the world is be very, very afraid. That's so true.
It is true. My goodness. Yeah. And yet, for those of us who are walking with Jesus, we're not alone in it, man. There's every way he can be with us and do what he wants to do. And then I got this from a good friend that decided to take a bit of a trek away from Jesus for a while. Said, I'm returning to a Messiah-centered life after a three-year trek through Buddhism and Taoism. I learned a lot and, of course, didn't find a superior path. I had just hoped to find more loving, caring people to journey with who resonated with me. But I found the same character flaws and even some religious abuse megachurch style in the Eastern faiths. And as I returned back to my first love, I revisited the God Journey podcast, and the episodes are resonating with me again. Isn't that cool? I've had two friends, this being one of them, and this is a lady actually we met out here, Sarah and I did in LA, spent some time with her, and then she moved away. Another friend I knew long time ago, and he went on a bit of a journey, and at one point, through some real pain in his life, and I was talking to him on the phone. He said, you know what? I'm just giving up on the faith. I'm going to go a different direction. And I think everything I've taught's been wrong. And I'm just tired of Christianity. He circled back years ago. And then she, 3 years, the wonderful thing about knowing Jesus is that he's real. So you can go try to find what you're looking for elsewhere. And if in terms of some of the cosmetic things that religion offers, whether it's Christianity or something else, you'll find similar things, good and bad, both. But man, the whole idea of, you know, you're going to come back to Jesus eventually, because Jesus is the one that walks with us, that holds us up. If you found a real relationship with him, if you're just practicing a religion that's got Jesus attached to it, it's not going to be so helpful. You might leave that at some point. But if you find the real connection that is with Jesus, then that'll be a beautiful thing.
I love that. There's a young lady in Jess and I's life that we've known for a long time. And she and I have just started to explore some of those conversations about maybe there is a loving God in the world. I've known this individual for a long time. We've had lots of deep conversations about life, and I've just been very open and honest with my journey with this individual, both Jess and I have, and our experiences and what that looks like in the world. And they were very staunch against anything that smelled of religion at all. Like the brand of Christianity was a very putrid odor in their nostrils. Yeah. They were not thrilled about that idea at all. And yet, over time, being able to watch and just enjoy friendship with Jess and I has opened a conversation of the love of the Father with this individual that I didn't know I would ever get to have with them. It just enjoyed them as a person. And yet now, the questions that they're initiating are just blowing my mind of like, oh my gosh, Lord, like, you're doing this. Like you're still like, I know you are actively engaged in pursuing people's hearts in no matter where they are, but sometimes I still get surprised by how he's doing it and where he's doing it.
Oh, that's great. I think we always ought to be surprised at what God does. Cause if we're not surprised, then we've got expectations that are probably being disappointed. I like living that open-handedly. It says, when I recognize some connection taking place, cause you can tell with Christians and in this area, and there's people we know, a lot of Christ followers, quote unquote, you can tell those who are on an adventure that stretches them daily, weekly, they're exploring things and excited about. And then others who have just fallen into a routine of Christianity is the thing I do to define my faith, but it's not really an adventure to me. It's just a matter of attending this or doing that discipline or... And it's lifeless. The difference between the life of an adventure and someone who's just going through religious motions because they've been taught that they're important, and it kind of is a touchstone for them. They kind of say, because I do that, it gives me some identity as a Christian. This I got from my friend Matt in Australia. He says, I'm learning this is harder to control and much more dynamic and in tune with Jesus' explanation of the spirit as wind. And what he's talking about control is the whole idea of some kind of legalistic approach to righteousness or community or whatever. That the legalistic approaches that we have learned, that we're pressured in, schooled in, conformity-based stuff. And I've had almost decided we could do a podcast on conformity cultures, because I've been with so many people who have burned out on the conformity culture they're in, the guilt they feel not to do certain things, but the doing of those things don't bring them life. It wears them out. And so he said, I'm learning it's harder to control and much more dynamic and in tune with Jesus' explanation of the spirit as wind in John 3. You can't break the wind down into controllable parts or acts to practice. There is no control of the wind, only receive, feel, and experience its impact. That's why the religion of the day was so afraid, as they lost their power to control. But conversely, when you receive and go with the wind, there is so much freedom and joy, as he is in control. And I can rest in that confidence, and that no matter what, I'm so good at trying to push back against the wind. So easy to talk about, but asking for help to be able to be blown by the wind and enjoy where it is taking me and where I end up before the next gust. Yeah. I love the free-spirited nature of that, which is what I think that's everything Jesus was pouring into that moment with Nicodemus. How do you ride the wind? Not how do you create a controllable religious expression loosely based on the teachings of Jesus, but how do you enter a relationship with him that's real, that's transformative, that takes you on a journey, and you ride with that wind instead of try to control him or it or you or your friends or anybody else in your life, to ride the wind of the spirit and that adventure. To me, this is the joy of the life that the God journey is really all about. And somehow when we try to replicate it in routine that is orchestrated from the outside, it never rises to that level.
I love your statement about the adventurer and the heart behind that and the flavor that comes with that, because there are people that I encounter, and yes, they talk about, I like the value systems, I like the ritual of my religious experience, and yet their life is flat. It doesn't have that draw, that adventure, that sense of life that's a part of it, where people are like, oh, what's going on in their world? What is it about them that is happening that they're actually living an adventure, that they actually see the world through a different lens that I don't see it through? And I think, man, so often that's where we get these associations. Like, for example, with the brand of Christianity, we get this association of it, you know, you follow the rules, you're a do-gooder, you conform to these different norms, and you're conservative, right? And that is the social expectation. That's what you're going to do. And yet it's like, okay, so then all of the other beautiful and unique expressions of the bride of Christ are completely negated by this brand that, like you said, has some loose ties to the life, loosely associated ties to the life of Christ.
To some of the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah, to some of the teachings.
But they ignore some of the other teachings of Jesus.
Yes, yes. The idea of conformity culture is such a unique one to me, because it's not just in our religious institutions, right? It is, whether it be in our work environment or whether it be in our friend groups or in our school districts or wherever it might be, these different social spheres of influence have their own ethos, their own culture, their own pull that's drawing us into what it means to be one of them. And some of them, if you're not one of them, then they're more dismissive or a little aloof or whatever. Some of them are very aggressive and violent in the way that they respond to not being one of them if you don't get into the box. And even just, I was at that collaborative on Friday, and a couple of my students bumped into me and they didn't recognize me, because I always wear a hat when I'm at work, and I usually dress not not casual, but kind of in that middle road of I look professional still, but I don't look like one of my students says, you look professional, but like you don't take yourself too serious. And I was like, perfect. That's exactly what I'm going for. Is like I'm approachable. I care about what I'm doing, but I don't take life so seriously that I can't be who I am. So they bump into me. I'm not wearing a hat. My hair is done. I'm wearing a suit jacket and fitted jeans and dress shoes. And they didn't even recognize me initially because I said hello to them. And they're like, whoa, what the, who are you? Because the audience that I was working with that day was CEOs and judges and hospital owners and all these different things. And so they were all in business formal attire. And I was laughing because they're like, well, you don't seem, the student was like, hold on, what's happening here? Like, you're not one of our people anymore. And I laughed and I said, I am, but there's another audience of my people that also have different norms and different social cues that they need me to adhere to. And it was just really interesting to see that and experience that and say, okay, was this a good confirmation? Was this good conformity? Or was this a, did this student perceive me wearing a suit jacket and being dressed up as a violation of some of what I speak or some of the values that I display or converse about in the classroom?
And maybe the conversation here comes full circle, because the reason why we don't have community naturally is because we have more norms and morals of things we put into those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I think the way to live, if you're living by the wind and the breath of the wind, then you're recognizing other people are doing that too. And yeah. So you're not trying to nail them down. And the very act of nailing down into a routine of some kind is to disrupt the adventure of the journey. And people who have an adventure, even if they're on different adventures, even if the adventures don't sink a lot, they have plenty of community to talk about, plenty of things that they're discovering or have questions about or want to explore, because they are on something that's not so routinized that it's just a matter of going through the motions to feel like I belong.
Yeah.
And I think that's where community springs from. Community, maybe probably the best of community, I think, springs from people who are on an adventure in their spiritual life, in their personal life. And if you're not on an adventure, then it's probably tough to sustain an exciting community.
Yeah.
Because it's too routine.
Oh, that's good. And I think one of the primary characteristics of those individuals, you just highlighted it, was questions. The questioning piece, right? Like I find that the people that are most exhilarating and that are on that adventure, they're still curious. They're still, you know, there's still questions in their mind and in the world around them. So that's intriguing to me.
Curiosity, you know, is very engaging, right?
Yes.
And the know-it-all, not engaging at all for any reason.
No, not at all.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.